Page 3 of the conversation, Dr. Kenneth Clark, April 15, continue.
That is, you are more willing to trust the orderly process of law and the long-range historical process, given human guidance and human
struggle. And vigilance.
Yeah.
Human guidance and vigilance.
And vigilance.
Yeah.
Without asking for an apocalyptic revelatory moment to change human nature. Is that it?
Or conversion.
Or conversion.
Yes. I don't feel happy with myself in my skepticism about any meaningful chances of moral conversion among human beings. I wish that I could believe in it, but to be quite candid with you, I don't and can't.
Let's switch the question of this moment and he quotes the movement or the revolt, whatever you choose to call it, and the concept of revolution. How much does this resemble a revolution? Or are we dealing with just words here? Is it a revolution? We talked about this before a little bit and didn't get very far with it.
Well, no, I think the term revolution is sort of a catchphrase and it has some kind of dramatic impact, but I don't think it's too helpful to describe the civil rights movement today. Revolution, to me, connotes, first thing that comes to my mind, of course, is the use of military methods and weapons, which obviously is not possible here. The second thing is, maybe even more important, a desire to change the total political and social and economic structure. This is clearly not indicated here. What I think the Negro is asking for is not a change in the total social, political, and economic structure of this system. All he's asking for is in. He's asking to be included. He's asking, look, I like this system so much, I want to be a part of it, you see.
Now, how does this relate, then, to the notion of not wanting to integrate with the burning house?
That's Baldwin's phrase.
That's Baldwin's phrase, and Louis Hansberg, too, isn't it?
And, yes, Helen Hansberg.
Helen Hansberg.
Yeah.
Is it Helen?
No, what is it?
Louise, isn't it? I'm not sure. I can't remember.
Anyway, we'll find it.
Yes.
I think this is a cry of anguish and despair, not to be taken too literally. I mean, because if you just look at... Ask yourself the question, well, what choice? What other choice?
That's a rational question, but there may be some deep dissatisfaction with American middle-class values that's involved here, though. It makes you say one say that.
Well, look, the guys who worked for Time and Life or on Madison Avenue had deep dissatisfaction with American middle-class values.
I don't blame
but
them either, tell you the truth.
I don't blame them, but they don't reject it. I mean, they still live in Hastings and Great Neck and... They still buy the status cars, large or small, depending upon the particular fashion. I don't want to seem disparage out of hand these comments, except that, again, I have to respect your question, and I give the best possible answer
it's
I can.
It's a real question, though.
Except that it isn't a real question, because there are no choices. You know, there are no alternatives here.
Proposed by people of all sorts whose words we must listen to, like Baldwin, for instance.
Yes, look,
Baldwin
to me is one of the most disturbing, irritating, incisive critic of our society at this time, you see. But this doesn't mean that... That Baldwin has the answers all the time. I mean, Baldwin expresses anguish. Baldwin expresses frustration, concern, and a wish for something better, and in the sense of a totality of betterness. And he also expresses the feeling that maybe he isn't going to get even the minimum. So therefore, forget everything else, in a sense. I want to continue about Baldwin, because
I
think that what Baldwin is expressing is his desires, you see. What he would like human beings to be like, what he would like the society to be like. Maybe what Baldwin has not yet understood and probably never should understand. Maybe he should never accept the possibility that there might be a tremendous gap between what he would like and what can be, you see. Because this might reduce his potency, his power as a passionate, incisive critic of what is. I repeat, Lorraine Hansberry and Jim Baldwin have no choice other than to be incorporated within this society and this culture pretty much as it is. You see. Now, what I will entertain the possibility of is that if America is capable of including the Negro more into the fabric of its society, that this will, on its face, strengthen the society. Not necessarily change it, you see. Not necessarily change its values, but make the existing values less liable to internal decay.
Yeah, sure.
You see, all right.
Let me ask another question about the overreaching techniques that all social movements have, even though short of revolution. Every leader must promise more than the last leader. He has to promise more excitement, or more results, or more this, or more that. Bigger and better demonstrations, more and more radical demands, more this. How much of this process of overreaching is now going on before our eyes in this struggle for power? Now, the struggle for power may be a struggle for putting up effective policy. I'm not being cynical. I say power, I don't mean this in necessarily a cynical sense. But we clearly see an escalating process going on of the overreaching, the more and more violent demonstration, or the more and more radical demand, the more and more rich promise. Now, what do you make of this process that we apparently see before? I have the beginning now in earnest.
Well, I think you have to look at that in terms of layers of leadership.
Yes.
At the top level of Negro leadership, I don't think this is an accurate description of the process. I think you don't see
this. No, you have people like Glanison and core people and all sorts of other things.
Now, what we do have now in the civil rights movement, as I see it, is a struggle for lower echelons of leadership, or would-be leaders, what I've called publicly maybe wildcat leaders, fitting your description of this process. I really don't know how seriously one...
I'm not referring to Mr. Wilkins, you
see,
or Mr.
Farmer. Will Farmer, or Whitney Young, or Martin Luther King.
No.
These seem to me extraordinarily sensitive, responsible statesmen. Like men who are not willing to compromise one iota on the goals, but who certainly present evidence of tremendous flexibility in methods and techniques. But then you have, on local levels, individuals who have a freedom that comes where one does not have responsibility, and who seem to be pushing the civil rights movement by techniques and approaches which are some people questionable.
I was talking yesterday on the telephone with Adam Clayton Powell, making a date for such an occasion as this, and he said, well, leadership, the old line is washed up. Looking elsewhere for it now, it's washed up. He said, we'll find it with the people like the core chapter. We'll find it with people like the writers group in Harlem. We'll find it here and there. We won't. He said, all steadily is washed up. They have only 900,000 followers anyway.
I don't agree with Mr. Powell. And I think that...
It's on the phone he's giving this lecture, you see. They're washed up, they're through.
No, I don't think that that's true at all. Not only are they not washed up and not through, but I think that their role is going to become increasingly important as the more dramatic techniques run their course. I mean, I feel very strongly that the more dramatic, flamboyant approaches that have a role, I mean, they have their role of dramatizing the issue, you know, of focusing it, but they don't resolve anything.
What about the Stalins now? What utility would they have?
The only utility I could possibly see for this is to raise the irritation level of the issue tremendously and require some kind of resolution. I think that Stalin's and all these other techniques make stagnation impossible.
Yes. What do you do about the Stalins if you were mayor of New York or head of the police department?
If I were mayor of New York, head of the police department, I'd get them the hell out of the way. I'd get them out as quickly as possible. I would open up the highways as quickly as possible, and I would not tolerate that kind of activity one moment, you see. If I were leaders of the Stalins, I would try to make it as uncomfortable and as difficult for the mayor of the city of New York and the police commissioner to do their job as I possibly could.
Well, now, this is describing, this is descriptive.
Oh, yeah.
You see, you are saying you don't choose sides. Each man hoorah for the let the devil take the hindmost, let him fight it out, as it were. You see, you said if you were this man, you do this, you fulfill your role. If you're the other man, you fulfill that other role.
I certainly would.
Well, but
what would I do personally?
Yes.
Hell, I would not join the Stalins. I would not participate in that any more than I think I would have participated in John Brown's band or in Malcolm X's.
Well, do you approve the Stalins or you won't participate?
No, I do not approve the Stalins, but I do not think my approval or disapproval is in any way relevant to whether those people are going to have a Stalins or not.
That's something else.
Yeah,
that's
or relevant else. To whether the mayor of the city... In fact, if the mayor of the city of New York and the police commissioner did not do their duty on that as a citizen, I would seriously question, you know, my vote for that. But that's another problem. I mean... You know, actually, these problems have to be dealt with by whatever ways people come up with dealing with them.
What do you think of the fact that is reported to me by a man who sat on the summit committee in Atlanta, the summit meeting in Atlanta, said that a certain man who should now be nameless, whose name we all know, had written a memorandum, we must get some heads broken by the police here in Atlanta. These police are too nice. We've got to get some bloodshed out of this, otherwise we're going to lose.
Gee, I can't imagine anyone... Well, I can't imagine
the police
myself.
The police did not oblige.
I think they were wise.
They were well-mannered Negro policemen to handle.
I think they were wise, and I think that the police in Birmingham and in Jackson, Mississippi were unwise. They were not only unwise, they were stupid.
They're insane.
Yeah.
But is this...
But by the way, I think that the police in Birmingham and the police in Jackson inadvertently contributed more to the civil rights issue than did the police in Atlanta.
All right. But now here's the point, you see. Given that fact, and then say you're on the summit committee, mm-hmm. and given this realistic fact that in Birmingham the police did no end of good for civil rights... And in Jackson, they do no end of good for civil rights. They give it a publicity.
In Atlanta, they don't.
And it don't. No, they have very well-mannered, courteous Negro policemen who carefully escort paddy wagon. As they get no bloodshed, they get no publicity. They get the negotiation, and they go on again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about the committee that says the memorandum is on the table? We've got to get some heads broken this time. We're not making it.
I would not personally write any such memorandum. I don't want to see people's heads get broken. And it's a very tough question, but again, I have to talk from the perspective of the person that I am. I'm a college professor. I deal in ideas, and I feel repelled by human irrationality and human cruelty. And I cannot accept it personally, even when I see it as an inevitable consequence of, past cruelty, etc. But I have to also add that I have to step back and look at this and look at my own feelings and say, well, look, these are your feelings. If you were in control of the world, this is the way you would run it, but you're not in control of the world. I personally wouldn't write any memorandum saying that people's heads ought to get broken in order to galvanize or mobilize feelings about the civil rights issue, because I don't believe in people's heads being broken. I don't believe in stagnation either.
But over the barrel, when you say that the inspired madman who, who breaks heads or cuts throats.
He is not I, though.
He's what?
He is not I. I am not he.
Be outside of history. We accept history
that's
by
right.
Improving it.
Therefore, I look at history and I look at it and some aspects of it I deplore. Even I can deplore some of it, which I see as, for example, the Civil War. It's horrible that people were killed, But apparently, slavery wasn't going to be dealt with unless people were killed.
That's an open question.
Yeah,
all
right. World War II. I think it was incomprehensible the number of lives that were lost in there. But also, apparently, if those lives had not been lost, there might still be bigger and better concentration camps, death camps, etc.
America entered the war to save the Jews or to avenge this terrible liquidation of the Jews in Germany. How much did that have to do with our entering the war?
I think that I don't know why America entered the war, but I know as a result of America's entering the war and as a result of Hitler being arrogant or stupid or blind enough to engage in a two-front war.
And the dumb jobs.
The concentration camps, the death camps were terminated. MacArthur had an opportunity to try to institute certain kinds of social reforms in Japan, which seemed better than worse. And I don't think that any of these things would have happened if America had not entered the war or if the Germans and the Japanese had won the war, And I'm a pacifist.
Yes.
But I also have to be a realist and say, well, look, I can be a pacifist all I want, but my guts would be eaten up if I had to live in a world where people were being fed to gas chambers because somebody didn't like their religion or their color.
Is there any solution for this split between I don't want to strike the memorandum to get the heads broken, yet I think it's a good idea to have some heads broken in order to get this event?
No, I do not think it's a good idea to have some heads broken in order to get some involvement. And I don't think we can get I don't think the planes are going to take off either. I don't think it's a good idea to have any heads broken. Purpose, I think, and let me see if I can make it perfectly clear, that in the world as it is now, it is tragic that the only way that human beings seem to be prepared to look at problems of justice and injustice, cruelty or inhumanity, is where these are intensified. This, to me, is the horrible thing.
We are all the beneficiaries of violence, frankly.
Isn't this horrible, though?
Horrible, I'm not.
Yes, well, this is what I'm saying, that it is horrible that irrational, violent, cruel, horrible things have to be done in order to prepare the way for the possibility of a little bit of change toward justice.
Thomas Jefferson said, liberty is won by inches.
Yeah. And the cost is damned high. I suggested, once in a paper that I wrote that maybe colleges and universities should give courses in irrationality and demagoguery because apparently these
they
are more...
They do.
Yes.
They're called history courses.
All right. I think they should give practicum courses in them,
Those are called sociology courses.
All right. Okay. So these are the things which apparently change.
Your time is up. Mm. You said you wanted to attend it.